Welcome to Briefings in Brief, a digest news and information from the Packet Pushers, typically covering vendor briefings, industry research and commentary. But today, I was recently observing a conversation in the Packet Pushers Slack channel, and Robin popped up to say he had deployed a VPN solution for thousands of people using AWS as a base layer for that. And I asked Robin if he would be able to come on and just sort of give us a hint. We can't talk about a lot of the details, but just give us a hint on how he went about it, because that's something that might be worth hearing if you're in the same situation with the pandemic thing that's going on around us. So, Robin, welcome very much to the Packet Pushers, and thanks so much for giving us your time. Tell who you are and what you can say in public.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm Robin Gilliamsen. I'm a Dutch network architect, and I'm working for a customer that's a fairly large globally operating company into high-tech manufacturing.
This customer, I imagine, didn't really have a system in place for remote working. You know, everybody's gone home for COVID. You know, with the context of the discussion was, how are we handling scaling up large-scale VPNs? And you said you worked with a client to actually put a VPN terminator in AWS, and you've scaled it up to several thousand clients.
That's true. We did have a remote work solution in place, but this was scaled for, well, a couple of hundred users, 150 simultaneously, 200. Pretty traditional in hardware in four regional data centers worldwide, US, East, West, Europe, and Asia. And all of it connected through MPLS and the DMVPN wide area network.
Traditional sort of thing, you know, 50 simultaneous users working from home, or, you know, people traveling, connecting to head office where the VPN concentrator is in the data center, I guess. And
yes.
Then internet through the firewalls and away you go. And now you've done something with AWS. So those on-premise stuff, you know, but I'm guessing by the time you bought new hardware, it'd be weeks or something like that. So you needed something that you could do in days.
Yeah, yes, exactly. It was about a couple of weeks ago, management came to us just fishing for a solution. We might be considering suspending all travel and having people work from home. Would that be possible with the current setup? No. What would it cost to scale it up? And we did a quick sketch. We had to scale up lines in all data centers, order hardware, ship hardware, because we had to replace not only the VPN concentrators, but also the routers and the firewalls to be able to cope with the traffic. And then we had to get some way to physically replace everything, including in Asia, which was already more or less in lockdown at the moment.
It becomes clear pretty quickly that it's not going to work. You're not going to get access to the data centers. You're not even going to get the gear shipped in time, no matter how many arms you twisted or how much money you promised. You ended up choosing AWS as a cloud service. Now, did you use the AWS VPN service, or are you doing it some other way?
No, we didn't. We decided to stay as close to what we were already doing as possible, mainly because we didn't want to impact any users already using the VPN. So we were using Cisco ASA with the AnyConnect VPN client for remote access, and we wanted to just scale that up to, well, 100-fold.
So did you look at the AWS VPN client, or did you come to the conclusion that its service, like, because in AWS, you could either put a virtual appliance in there and start using that, or you could use AWS's VPN service. You know, you didn't choose the AWS product. You went down the other path.
Yeah, we didn't really look at the AWS native VPN client, because we really wanted to stick to the stuff we were already using. And that meant, well, the AnyConnect client, because it was already there on laptops, and we didn't want to put an extra burden on Service Desk to not only deploy more laptops, but also learn a new stack.
What does the solution look like? Are you running virtual appliances in the AWS cloud?
Yeah, well, it sounds really simple. It's almost the same as a physical appliance. Just deploy the VMs and you're good to go. But that's sadly not true. Because cloud works a bit different. You have to create your own overlay between all your appliances. We have VPN tunnels. We have AnyConnect. Sorry, we have ASA VPN concentrators connected with a tunnel to Palo Alto firewall, connected with a tunnel to a CSR router that participates as a spoke in our DMVPN network. And we had to figure out a way to connect it all together, deploy it, figure out how it scales. For example, the virtual ASA appliance in the license that we're using scales to 250 users, which means we have to deploy a lot of them.
So you're playing, 10, 20, 30, 40, something like that?
We're currently running, and I have to, we just spun up a few more to cope with demand, 32.
And they're spread across multiple data centers worldwide?
Yes, we chose four regions, and within each region, we deploy in two availability zones. And we scaled it in a way to create pods of VPN service.
You've got 32 nodes distributed across four data centers. So how are those VPN clusters or those VPN nodes, if I guess we'll call them that, connected back to the services? Because the services are probably all in private data centers. So you must have a connection from AWS to your private data centers in some way?
That was one of the problems that we were trying to solve. The services that we are providing are not concentrated in the data centers. Mm-hmm. We are providing wide area networking services for multiple semi-independent subsidiaries of the company. So we wanted to leverage the multi-VRF DMVPN network. So each pod in AWS has a Cisco CSR router, which is a DMVPN spoke, which sets up dynamic spoke-to-spoke VPN tunnels to all the locations worldwide.
It's not like this organization has four data centers somewhere, a cluster of data centers. It's actually a fully distributed operation.
Yeah, that's correct. We do have four data centers, but that's where the wide area networking equipment is concentrated and not necessarily where the applications are.
Because the thing that's in the back of my mind is if I'm putting a VPN concentrator in the cloud, I've solved the ability to have lots of VPN concentrators, but I haven't solved the bandwidth problem into my data center. So that's still an issue, I imagine. Or how have you solved that?
Yeah, that's why we're using the DMVPN on the back end, because that was one of the problems that we wanted to solve. We could not just tunnel all the traffic through the data center, because then we would still have to upgrade the lines, upgrade the routers.
Oh, because you're not tromboning it, because what you're not doing is bringing it all in and then turning it around and sending it back out to the internet because you didn't want to do local breakout?
We're doing a full tunnel VPN.
Yep.
So all internet traffic goes to AWS through the ASA, then on to the Palo Alto firewall in each VPN pod where we do filtering.
Content inspection. All that sort of stuff.
From there, we have a tunnel to Zscaler for the internet traffic. So that leaves that doesn't enter our network. It just goes to AWS and then to Zscaler. And only the traffic that's destined for private networks goes into the DMVPN network where it's handled spoke to spoke. So it goes directly to the locations where it needs to be and doesn't.
Effectively, you're using AWS as like a high speed on demand internet connection. There's no split tunneling, there's no local breakout for users. You need to be able to capture all that data. So you go into AWS, terminate on some ASA VPNs, and that's all the traffic from the laptops, the smartphones using the Cisco VPN client. And then the traffic then goes through some content inspection using Palo Alto's and then goes on out to the internet, turns around and goes back out of the AWS to Zscaler. Yes. The rest of the traffic heads on into the data center. So the traffic that goes into the data center isn't the trombone. It's just the traffic that needs to go to the data center. And that's how you solve the problem of the capacity at the local data center.
Yes.
Authentication. How are you doing authentication for the solution? Did you deploy authentication services in AWS as well?
Well, not in AWS. We're on the back end. We're running Cisco ICE, and it doesn't work on AWS. So that's still in our data center, still physical devices.
Okay, that must be nervous, but that's okay. It must be working. And then that authentication request is flowing over a DMVPN from the CSRs, I imagine.
Well, actually, we have direct connects into the regions. Authentication is going over the Direct Connect, but it's only the Direct Connect is only used for management, productivity.
What are you using for the load balancing? If you've got so many ASA VPNs, what are you using to load balance across the traffic then?
Well, that was kind of the hardest problem to solve.
I was thinking that when you said you had 32, and I'm going like, okay.
At first, we just put in an AWS Elastic Load Balancer in front, and that works for SSL traffic only. But when you're using AnyConnect, you really want to use DTLS because it has a much better performance and it's UDP rather than TCP. So that's nice, except that we couldn't really load balance the DTLS traffic properly. Yeah. It didn't work properly.
Right.
So we moved to ASA native VPN load balancing. And that's a very interesting mechanism where traffic hits one ASA, which is the master, and it distributes it to according to load to the other ASAs.
Does that work? So that works in the cloud? Because usually those...
Yeah, yes and no. Because there are two restrictions on that. The first is all the ASAs have to be in the same subnet for the load balancing mechanism to work, for the hellos to work. And the second is that the master election uses ARP. All the nodes try to ARP for the master virtual IP. Mm-hmm. And if nobody's answering, then one will take it over.
Yeah.
But in AWS, there's always an answer because it's not the node that's answering, it's the AWS mapping service that answers.
Yeah.
So that really doesn't work natively. So we had two problems to solve. The first one was all the VPNs in the cluster had to be in the same subnet. So we created a subnet per availability zone, mm-hmm. which is two per region. And then we use, which doesn't work at all in AWS.
Because no broadcast, no multicast. Yeah. And the master normally declares itself master by broadcasting, and then there's an...
It's AWS Elastic Load Balancer to distribute traffic to the virtual IP of the master.
Okay. So have you manually configured a master then?
More or less. The master needs a virtual IP address. We manually configured a secondary IP address on one ASA. Uh-huh. Which takes the initial connection and then distributes it to the other nodes in the cluster. Now, the problem is that when that master fails, it will not fail over natively because the secondary IP address is still on that master node. Mm-hmm. So we did something with a Lambda function that monitors the load balancer, sees when it becomes unhealthy, when the node has failed, and in that case, moves the secondary IP address to another node,
okay.
which will then automatically become the master.
So using manual automation or handcrafted automation to track the state of the master. So the master is effectively statically configured, and you have a script which is checking the health of the master, and if the master dies, you terminate it and then configure another one to become manually the master. Okay, using a Lambda function, which is nice, a little bit of serverless scripting. In the cloud, this is where the stuff in the cloud starts to work together.
It works really well, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You had a couple of times where it fails, like you're expecting the ASAs to fail, so you planned for this.
We haven't yet had any actual failures. We did some testing where we simulated failures by shutting down interfaces, but we haven't had any in production. We haven't had any instances fail. Right. But on the other hand, it is the cloud, so.
Yeah, they can reboot them at any time. So, you need to be prepared. So, have you got any other forms of logging and monitoring going on? Are you collecting all the logs locally in the cloud, or are you just going forward with it as it is?
We have Splunk forwarders in each region. Mm-hmm. So, the security team can see everything. And we have a Panorama to manage the Palo Alto firewalls. Mm-hmm. And that's not a luxury.
No.
We're deploying one Palo Alto per VPN street. So for every two ASAs, we have one Palo Alto firewall, and they all need to be identical. So you don't want to manage them by hand.
That's a lot of gear to get set up in a short period of time. That sounds like you spent a lot of late nights. So, which begs the question, easy or hard? And was there multiple of you doing the work, or was it just you?
No, there were three of us, and it was hard. Mm-hmm. Because we had to move from ID to production in about 2 weeks, and it was quite new for us. I have some experience with AWS, but not in deploying this many network appliances. Mm-hmm. And some technology works perfectly, and some doesn't work as you expect or as you're used to in hardware. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot of effort.
But you've got a working solution. You got it up in a matter of weeks. You've gone from hundreds of users to many thousands of simultaneous users. I guess the next thing that the customer will be asking you is how to reduce the cost, but that's a problem for another day. I bet it's not cheap.
No, it's not. Depends on how you look at it. When we initially deployed it, we went with the pay-as-you-go model for the market. marketplace subscriptions, off-the-shelf interfaces. And that's really, really, really expensive. The good thing about AWS is that you can see what is costing per day, every day. You don't have to wait for the bill. You can open the cost explorer and see where the money is going. And that was quite expensive. However, for both Cisco and Palo Alto, you can request private offerings instead of pay-as-you-go marketplace subscriptions, and it saves about 60%.
Right.
So that's significant.
So you are already into the cost optimization phase. You've got the cloud. You're working in it. You realized it costs a lot of money, and now you're into wasting time on cost optimization.
Well, you can't postpone it indefinitely. It's best just to take costs into account immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the bill comes due every month. So
it's funny, isn't it? It's like, you know, now one of the interesting things about the cloud is once you've got it, everybody spends all their time trying to find ways to reduce the cost. And you're like, can't you move on and find something more effective to do? But, you know, it just amuses me a little bit.
That's because it's possible. If you buy hardware on a 5-year...
Yeah, all that pricing is fixed. There's nothing more you can do about it. It's just a trap you can get caught into. You can start spending a lot of time in the cloud worrying about optimizing cost when you would be better off doing something else is one of the traps. Because you can fiddle with the cost, you might... It's called bike shedding. Just because you can, you might waste time on something and it's not actually all that valuable overall. Might be, but it might not be, is my point.
Good to get the big expenses out of the way.
Yeah.
And to know where the money's going. And at a certain point, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really impressed. Three people inside of a couple of weeks to stand this up and get it all nailed. And as you said, you weren't exactly cloud experts at the start. So you had to wrestle with that. And then you're also putting together a multi-vendor technology on platforms that doesn't... I haven't heard too many success stories of ASAs and Palo Altos on public clouds. So, you know, I think that's a pretty heroic effort.
Well, we're really pleased that we were able to provide this, especially in these difficult times, for everybody who has to work at home. It's not optional. So we're happy we can supply people with a way to do the work without risking themselves. We're very happy that it actually works and we've got it up and running and not too many issues still open.
Fantastic.
Thank you. That I want to do better the next time something like this comes around is that we automated a lot of stuff with for the network configurations. We decided, well, we've deployed plenty of network equipment. We can do that by hand. Don't. Try to do automation from the start, especially when you're deploying a lot of similar appliances. Just automate it. It'll save you a lot of worries.
Did you have to learn automation, or is that something that you had already done some of and just needed to keep going with it?
No, I've been working with Ansible, Python for a while now. Terraform, which we use to deploy the infrastructure, this new, but I've done some stuff with it. But it's mostly me doing all the automation and not the three of us doing automation. So that's why we decided not to invest too much on a completely automated platform and just get stuff up and running.
So that means you're using Terraform to deploy new instances and Ansible to do the configurations. Is that correct?
Well, now we're starting to use more Ansible. But initially, we just did Excel-based templating.
Right. Okay. You got started, and now you're saying, I've got 32 firewalls that I have to keep the configurations the same, 32 ASAs and growing, or you know whatever the number might be. How do I keep them all in configuration sync? Is that the...
That's one, and the other is whenever we need to add capacity, and we probably will need to add capacity, we wanted to do it fast. This week, it took us 2 days to significantly increase capacity in two regions, and we want to do it in hours, and that should certainly be possible once we get all the automation done. But it's easier to do all the automation from the start than to plug it in afterwards.
I guess you didn't have a lot of time to do the automation. You didn't have plenty of time to get a testbed working and things like that. You must be coming from behind, I imagine.
Yeah, in an ideal world, we would have done a proof of concept that figured out, ironed out all the bugs, figured out what would be the best way to deploy it, and then scrap everything and create a deployment method and then deploy everything. well, it wasn't an ideal world, so we just started building.
One of the great things is you can actually just get a lot of things done in times like these without having to faff around. And people are willing to take risks that they wouldn't normally live with. So in some ways, you probably got more done because of it than you might have otherwise, perhaps.
Well, that's certainly true.
Well, Robin, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking to us. I know we can't talk about who and or any of the details, but I just wanted to get some insights into this so that if anybody out there is facing the same problems as you, maybe they can take some inspiration from this discussion. And thanks for being in the Slack channel and contributing to the people there and helping them find their own way.
No problem. My pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks very much for listening to this. If you've enjoyed it, perhaps you'd like to find out more podcasts from the Packet Pushers Network over at packetpushers.net. And thanks very much for listening.